This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're joined by John Philpott, a distinguished lawyer of Montreal who represented accused before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. And of course, we want to talk to John today because a leading personality in the tribunal, you could almost say a target of the prosecution, Colonel Theoness Bagosora has died in Mali at the age of 80. And Western media and their coverage has been using very inflammatory language about the colonel, which in my view is not accurate. And fortunately we have John Philpott, who has in the courtrooms many times and has been very familiar with the tribunal and the cases from the beginning. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and we are all saddened by the death of this fine man.
Well, I think that's a good note to start with, because if we read the headlines, the New York Times, I think, called Colonel Bagosora the architect of the genocide. Others said he was the kingpin of the genocide. He was, mastermind? I guess that's the favorite word. Now, I was in the courtroom myself for the testimony of General Dallaire on the matter. His name is coming up in relation to Bagosora. The Canadian media is making a link between the two as though it's some kind of a good guy, bad guy story. Now, you've just described the colonel in positive terms. Tell us about what did the court say on the issue of the mastermind, the conspirator, the organizer, et cetera?
Well, he had a long trial. He was very well defended. And after 7 or 8 years of trial, he was found not guilty of conspiracy. And that was the key finding. The conspiracy to commit genocide, he was acquitted. And this tribunal spent, is it $2 billion? They spent a lot of money. They had a lot of investigators, and they made a tremendous effort to try and convict Mr. Bagosora of planning the horrible events which happened in Rwanda. And the prosecutor lost with all the efforts of the UN put behind the prosecutor. He was found guilty at the trial of ordering some killings in different localities. And on appeal, he was cleared of all individual acts, that is, kill this person, ordering his underlings or his lower, which he didn't have any, but his underlings to kill people. He was acquitted of all those. And he was only found guilty of being negligent because he should have known, and he had to know, that his underlings were going to carry out some killings in those 3 days from the 7th to the 10th of April 1994. So he was found guilty of, you might call it criminal negligence, but he should have known. And this doesn't even exist, I don't think, in Canadian law. He would have been acquitted because that's not a crime in Canadian law. And they reduced his sentence on appeal from life to 35 years, which to me is much too much. Mm-hmm. So his trial was a relative victory against the claim of genocide being planned and organized by a senior military figure.
Yeah, that's so striking. They accused the four. There were four generals, not generals, pardon me, colonels. And they were allegedly conspiring, and you've just laid out that at the end of the day, the charges against Bagasora were command issues of should have known, etc. And in the case of General Cabaligi, he was a general. He was completely acquitted.
Because he wasn't there.
Who was allegedly one of the conspirators. And by the way, John, I want to read this. And we have our guest is John Philpott, who defended a rather famous accused, and we want to come to that momentarily. But I want to read to you the words of Carol Loff speaking to, actually it's not Carol Loff, it's, pardon me, it's someone from As It Happens, and to introduce their interview with General Dallaire on about Colonel Bagasora. And they begin, they say, in the words of Romeo Dallaire, Theoneste Bagasora was the kingpin of the Rwandan genocide. This is over the CBC radio. And the court that sentenced Colonel Bagasora to prison agreed. So Bagasora said, pardon me, Dallaire said he was a kingpin, and the court, said the CBC announcer, agreed. I think what you just told us that they didn't agree that he was a kingpin.
No, of course not. I mean, they had no evidence. And I repeat myself, after spending large amounts of money to try and prove it, and the judges were quite had a quite a penchant for accepting the prosecutor's theories. It wasn't, but the defense proved, raised more than a reasonable doubt, in my opinion, that this wasn't true, and he was acquitted of the conspiracy. And in fact, the global conspiracy was not accepted by any judgment. There were some, minor agreements, alleged conspiracies for in localities where accused got together and planned.
Yeah.
But the national conspiracy did not exist. The planning, the alleged planning never existed. And it's shocking when you think that this tribunal said certain things, and all the media and all the so-called think tanks and all the so-called intellectuals still carry on with this story, and they have no respect for the rule of law. And the rule of law at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda was biased in favor of the prosecution, but even then it didn't pass. Didn't pass the test. And that was true.
I assume for lawyers like yourself and others who followed this, rather frustrating to go through the courts, hear the testimony and see it weighed. And at the end of the day, the reporters go back to telling stories that they had in 1994. So you would certainly ask them, well, why did you bother to have a trial if you're just going to repeat the same lies? Maybe the confusion about Colonel Bagasora, because he has the title Colonel, I think people assume that he was a major military leader. But what was his role?
He was the head of the Ministry of Defense. He was not even a soldier at that time. He was a political figure, and he was not in the army, and he didn't do anything in the army. And they had to make a construct saying that he had the effect of control, but he was not a soldier at the time.
But that was because in his minister, he's a cabinet, they call him the cabinet officer. Mm-hmm. His minister was abroad, was not in the country, yes, which meant that he had to assume responsibility, right?
Some responsibility, and he was involved in some of the negotiations, but he was not in charge of the army, and he was not acting and giving orders to the army.
Another matter that came up, I want to make sure that, and we talked to you about this, because your client, Mr. Ziggy Ranurazo, was, when his case came up, it was a similar attention to it, because he was called Mr. Z, and he already had a reputation in Canadian media, Belgian media. They had created an idea that there was a group called, you would be able to tell us, the Zero Network. Now, I was surprised to see that Dallaire, in talking to As It Happens, referred to the Zero Network and said that Bagasora was a part of it, and also that the French took the leading members of the Zero Network out of Rwanda in the first 48 hours. Well, your client was the one individual that it was claimed of him that he was a leader or a member of the Zero Network. So tell us about what was discovered in your case.
Well, Mr. Zigaran Urazel was allegedly head of the Zero Network. They also called it the Akazu, a little group of people around the president. And they allegedly conspired prior to the attack on the plane to exterminate Tutsis, and they conspired to exterminate Tutsis after the plane was shot down. And he had a trial which lasted about 6 years, the procedures, and he was acquitted on everything. And the opposition parties came to the court and testified that these terms, Akazu and Zero Network, were simply terms invented by the opposition in the political disputes, which began in 1991, 1992, up until the assassination of President Habyarimana in 1994. So this is all a pack of lies, which was not retained by the court. And Mr. Zigaran Urazel was acquitted of conspiracy, and he was acquitted of all the other charges or that he's allegedly ordered such and such a person to be killed, et cetera, et cetera. So their whole organization, plan of how this happened pretty much fell apart. And this is the story at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. The world doesn't seem to care. They really don't seem to care. The story has been written, the book's been written, and these people who were acquitted are still sitting, as you know, in Arusha, and most of them cannot be transferred, go to their families, who are based in Europe in general now. So,
that is one of the great injustices. You have people acquitted, and which means they should be permitted, they're innocent like other people, and they should be with their families. But the UN that put them on trial doesn't fight to return them the rights and the declaration of innocence which they have given them, doesn't defend them.
That's a lesson which we should all learn, and all lawyers and interested persons should understand that international criminal law does not have the standards that national legal systems sometimes have. And I don't want to praise our national legal system, but if Phil Taylor is acquitted of drunk driving, he's acquitted and it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, I'm very glad we're having a chance to talk to you, because of course you were in that courtroom and won that battle. It would be helpful if the ICTR they do make it available. It'd be helpful if we could develop some interest in actually making the court records available in the media here.
That would be.
I think it's bizarre that Dallaire is telling a fairy tale about the Zero Group. And his credibility in this, in my opinion, is absolutely zero because here you have, they did not find that Bagasaur was a kingpin, yet Dallaire is paraded as the guy who who got it right. He didn't get it right on that. He's talking about a zero network. You just showed that there wasn't one, the courts found. Part of our problem is the legend of Dallaire is confusing everyone. The media here is so protective of him. They don't actually treat him as a human. They treat him as some kind of demigod. Also one who, because of his post-traumatic problems, stress problems, that he's like irreproachable. But unfortunately, he went into a courtroom and gave evidence and tried to do a lot of damage with his evidence. I wonder if you've looked at the judgment. I assume you've read some of it, or maybe perhaps all. They are saying here that Bagasora's evidence was somehow weighty or crucial. I didn't get that sense myself reading the judgment, that they thought that his testimony had any significant value.
It was not particularly based on, his acquittal was based on the weakness of the prosecution evidence and not necessarily on his own evidence, which is a good thing for Mr. Bagasora because they're so biased against him that had the case depended on his testimony, they would have just thrown it out. But the prosecution evidence was so weak, nonsensical, that Mr. Bagasora was acquitted. And they made this artificial construct of being liable because he should have known that his so-called underlings, which weren't his underlings, but...
Another element that strikes me about the reporting, and I think really it seems to me this is where we are with the journalists have not looked into the actual trial record or the judgment. They are going by popular anecdotes and... they're very parochial, I notice. For example, Dallaire is cited continually in reference to Bagasora. It's not mentioned that Colonel Luc Marchal of Belgium testified in this case for the defense. And now he was a major figure. He was in charge of the security for the Kigali sector, is my memory.
Yes.
And the Belgian troops were a major part of the drama. Yet the fact here you have everyone saying Dallaire testified and he doesn't like, and indeed he literally demonizes Bagasora, calls him a devil, lets other people call him a devil. We're supposed to go into theology. But they don't mention that the Belgian colonel did not have the same view of Bagasora.
Well, he wrote to me 3 days ago, because I wrote a small article, basically what we're talking about today, and sent it around to our friends who are following these trials. And he wrote to me personally saying that he's so sad that such lies are propagated.
Say that again. It's so sad.
Luc Marchal wrote me an email, I think on Tuesday, two days ago, saying that he was saddened to notice that the media are making up all these stories about Mr. Bagasora, which are contrary to the truth.
Yes, and isn't it striking? Here's a man who put himself on a stand, took the oath and testified for the defense, largely for Kabilegi, but had a different view of what was going on in Kigali in 1994, April 6, 7, 8, 9. And again, just to be clear, Bagasora's authority ended on the 9th, I believe. Am I right?
That's what I understand it was. So yes.
3 days are what we are talking about, where he actually had authority.
Yes.
Some legal responsibility.
Yes, exactly.
And the leaders of the various units of the Rwandan army were not taking orders from him. They were fighting as soldiers. People forget. The war began on the night of the assassination on April 6th, and the two armies engaged from that moment. Another matter that is ignored here by the media, and we're speaking to John Philpott. I want to speak to another aspect of that since I've mentioned Luc Marchal, the colonel. Bagasora was given responsibility for the deaths of the Belgian soldiers. Now, that has always been, to my mind, highly problematic. And I want to review with you what I know and tell me what that you can recall. But on the morning of April the 7th, there was a meeting of the Rwandan army officers to which General Dallaire was invited. These are allegedly the conspirators in the mind of Dallaire. They have a meeting of 20 or 30 officers at Camp Kigali. He goes to the meeting, and on his way, he sees a Belgian or a, yeah, I guess it was a Belgian he saw. He saw a Unimir soldier on the ground in some kind of a struggle with Rwandan soldiers. And he continued on to the meeting. He says he saw it. He continued on to the meeting. He walked into the meeting with Rwandan army officers. I don't think he could have been more than a quarter of a mile from where he saw what he saw, and did not say anything until the end of the meeting. And I understand that you might want to talk about Bagasaurus as being an officer and having some, but where is Dallaire's culpability in not himself acting on behalf of his own fallen soldier?
Well, had he seen what you're describing, he could have, I'm sure he had a radio, he had a driver, he could have intervened, he could have called for immediate intervention to try and protect that person. And so he was being negligent. And by the same token that Mr. Bagasaurus was allegedly guilty, well, Mr. Dallaire would probably be guilty of the same.
If it's negligence, you have at least two officers. Anyone who heard about it in any authority, position of authority, becomes involved and is culpable to some degree if they did not act.
For sure. Absolutely.
And they were not dead at that point.
He could have stopped it, probably. If that's that story, he would have had a good chance of preventing it from happening.
Pardon? Say that again. Sorry.
He would have had a reasonable chance of preventing the murder of the Belgian soldiers.
Had he stood up among those army officers and said, I have soldiers down here, that was a diverse group of officers. I have to say, my own opinion is he seems to have been treating them like an enemy. But to what end? I mean, if he didn't want to trust them to try to save the Belgians, then he should have taken the responsibility himself and over people he had command of and see what he could do.
Well, maybe he had another agenda, which is that there was an offensive of the RPF underway from the north of Kigali. He may have had a second agenda that he wanted the other party, the invaders, to take power. And that might have been his plan or his understanding.
I think we should really, by the way, this is John Philpott, a true defendant accused at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, bring out a rather important detail for all this talk about the evil conspiracy and how they were all devils, or Bagasaurus was a devil. Bagasaurus and General Dindili Mana were the two key people at the meeting. Dindili Mana was also acquitted of all charges. He was co-chairing both the meetings that Dallaire attended while the Belgians were being beaten to death or struggling for their lives. And they did something else that doesn't match the story of a great conspiracy. They chose a new commanding officer for the entire Rwandan armed forces. His name was General Gatsinzi, if I recall.
Yes, that's his name.
And who is he today?
I don't know whether he's still in Rwanda. I don't know whether he still is a military, but he did join
He joined the RPF.
Yes.
And at the time that they appointed him to lead the entire army, Davium Command, he was already known to be an officer of not particularly enthusiastic about President Habyarimana, not particularly,
exactly,
actually no great interest in the war. But they gave him the job largely because out of the old rules of seniority. He was the senior commander after General Sabimana, who was killed along with the president.
They brought him from Butari to on the 9th, I think. It
was, and gave him command. This was Bagasora, who the Toronto Star, CBC, Dallaire is calling a devil. Bagasora chaired the meeting where they chose General Gazziti to lead the army. This is pathetic, is it not? This,
for sure.
This is on the verge of high comedy, if it weren't so macabre.
I'd like to say something about Mr. Bagasora, because I was released at his two-thirds, and he did not get released at his two-thirds of his time, unlike people in the past were getting it. He wanted to have a few years in being free, either in Europe or in Mali, and he was refused that by the present president of the tribunal. And I think it's shocking that they bend the rules and find a way to not let people out, saying, once again, he did not regret what he had done, when we pointed out the same things we pointed out today of the nature of his conviction. And he didn't have proper medical care in the last year. And it's very important that we understand that, because there's a lot of other aging prisoners. And I think it's important for us to, we've worked hard to try and improve medical services. We've had some success, but with the aging prisoners, they have to be treated in the same way an aging prisoner would be treated in a Canadian prison.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think those are all good points. The job before us, I believe, is to take this strange missionary, quasi-theological language and racial language out of the mouths of mainstream media, who think they can call someone a devil, whom they don't know. He definitely is not the devil. That's why I understand the devil is does his own work. To speak in that way, and happily, and to say things like, I shook hands with the devil, and to Alan Thompson, the Toronto Star, says, oh, and me too, I met Bagasora, and I too. It's like we're getting in line for this idea of demonization of the African accused, where they're all very comfortable saying the most terrible things about them. It's another country, it's another language, it's another culture. And completely, as you've said, illustrated in your remarks, completely inappropriate. And it's an embarrassment to have a tribunal and to go through a whole process only to find ourselves with this kind of insulting and misleading, misinforming talk out of our journalists. I hope, John, that we can get to speak to you again. I know you're going to Africa. I'd like to talk to you again in the future about these notions of the Akazu. I almost said Akazu. The Akazu and the Zero networks, because it's a myth, it's a legend. And if we permit it to go on, lies about what happened in Rwanda will go on. So, John Philpott, I want to thank you very much for being with me.
And I know the family would be very happy that you raise these issues.
This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. We'll be back shortly.